From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, November 21st, 2016. And on this day, two serious crashes on the Maine Turnpike Friday left hundreds and maybe thousands of travelers stuck on the road for hours. And critics are now questioning how the situation was handled. A program in Lewiston seeks to help new Mainers overcome cultural barriers to getting enough exercise. And Americans will pay less for this year's Thanksgiving meal than they have in decades. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light, now through December 31st, MaineGardens.org, and USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
I'm Barbara Caridi. State authorities have taken some flack for their handling of two crashes on the Maine Turnpike Friday that left hundreds and maybe thousands of travelers stuck on the road for nearly 5 hours. And they're acknowledging some shortfalls in communications with the public and apologizing for the inconvenience. But they are firmly holding that they had other priorities, too, securing a potential crime scene, averting further accidents, and showing respect for the man and young boy who were killed. Fred Bever reports.
It was a combination of two accidents that put part of the turnpike between Wells and Kennebunk in a kind of lockdown during the Friday commute. First, a southbound car hit the median, ejecting the driver. As emergency responders were securing that scene and taking the critically injured driver to the hospital, northbound drivers slowed to gawk. It's a slowdown police say played a role in the second horrific accident. A box truck carrying mail slammed into the back of a passenger car, apparently pushing it into and under the back of a tractor trailer. Killed were Earl Gray, a volunteer driver from Waterboro, and Wyatt Frost, a 5-year-old from Lyman. Peter Mills, the executive director of the Maine Turnpike Authority, says the scene posed an unusually complex situation for emergency responders, investigators, and turnpike staff.
The question was how to get these vehicles disentangled, get the car towed off to our maintenance yard where we could, with some measure of respect, deal with the two bodies.
And even once the actual vehicles were removed, the investigation continued. State Police Lieutenant Eric Baker was commanding officer on the scene. He says the force of the collision strewed wreckage and skid marks. Other potential evidence of a crime was committed for dozens of yards, creating an investigatory challenge that could only be solved with methodical, time-consuming work.
We get one shot at this. If we were to open up that road, evidence would have been driven over, evidence would have been swept away, and we would have ruined that scene. So for us to be able to do a complete, thorough, and professional job, it was important that we shut the road down.
For some 5 hours, eventually causing an 8-mile backup, with some traffic diverted to nearby Route 1, which slowed to less than a crawl. Starting soon after the accident, the Turnpike Authority put out emergency notices on Twitter, Facebook, and its network of AM radio public information signals. Even so, drivers were restless, tweeting and posting and calling into the Turnpike offices, seeking information about when they could move on. As one wrote on Twitter, "I'm sorry for the horrific accident. It's been over 4 hours. Why can't you open one lane?" said another. "Get your game together, Maine. New York would have opened one lane within 40 minutes after full investigation." Turnpike Director Peter Mills notes that maintenance crews were sent to the scene to provide water, gas, and jump starts, and he says the scene was so involved, state police could not give a firm estimate of when the road could be opened up.
Frankly, it's probably a good thing that we didn't put out estimates that were inaccurate, because that would have been the temptation.
He acknowledges that the AM radio signal's value is limited because the signal can fade in and out.
I received at least one message from somebody who said the flashes went on telling me to tune into 1610 and all I could get was Indian music.
Mills says he will investigate ways to improve that service, and State Police spokesman Stephen McCausland says his agency needs to address why it did not use its Facebook site during the event. But
we did it primarily through the news media. The Turnpike Authority did it very effectively, direct, with their Twitter accounts and their Facebook accounts. Could we do things differently? That'll be all part of the after-action review.
Some of those stuck between the scene and the next exit down, where others were being diverted, complained that authorities did not find a way to get them off, maybe opening up a lane on the northbound side or even creating a special route for them on the southbound side. But authorities decided that using the southbound lanes as an exit would just risk more accidents, while estimating that given their backup on Route 1, the stranded stood a better chance of getting home by just waiting for the scene to clear. If the weather was dangerously cold or hot, though, says Lieutenant Baker,
we would have looked at it maybe a little bit different of what we can do for those people. But we felt that they were all pretty safe, and really what they lost was time. You know, and we apologize they lost that time. But for us, we had to do an investigation that was important to the families of all those that were involved.
The investigation continues, with police seeking warrants for cell phone and other records that could provide information on the vehicles involved, their drivers, and insights into what happened immediately before the accidents. Results aren't expected for at least a month. Turnpike and public safety officials are also planning a joint formal review of the road closure, including the communications efforts. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
After the first third of Maine's budget year, revenues are $52 million above projections. But as Mal Leary reports, the state's finance commissioner says there are still reasons to be concerned about Maine's bottom line.
Finance Commissioner Richard Rosen says the state's economy continues slow, steady growth, with both income taxes and sales taxes performing better than originally projected. But he says whether that will continue through the rest of the budget year is unknown. He says the Revenue Forecasting Group plans to meet in the spring to review the impact of the income tax increase and minimum wage increase apparently approved by the voters, as well as new federal overtime rules that take effect next month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Meanwhile, one of Maine's largest employers is going through a leadership transition. General Dynamics, the parent company of Bath Iron Works, said today that Dirk Lesko has been appointed BIW's president. The shipyard employs some 6,000 workers in Maine. General Dynamics officials say the appointment is effective as of January 1st, following the retirement of Frederick Harris. The company's executive vice president, John P. Casey, praised Harris for, quote, significant contributions to the U.S. Navy shipbuilding programs. BIW workers have built naval and commercial ships since the 19th century. The shipyard's Machinist Union Local S6 president, Rich Nolan, says the union has what he described as a fairly decent working relationship with Lesko. He says Harris was unpopular with many members, and the end of his tenure will likely boost morale. And a law firm and two support groups are teaming up to help transgender individuals obtain IDs that reflect their gender. Jennifer Levi of the advocacy group GLAAD says the law firm of Ropes and Gray will provide free legal assistance in making needed changes.
There can be challenges revising identity documents. People can have inconsistent documents. It can be a difficult process for some people to negotiate. And so it's really important to be able to have government-issued ID that reflects a person's life.
Levi says those who need free assistance can find an online form they can fill out at GLAAD's website, glaad.org. You can find that link on our website, mainpublic.org. Meanwhile, last night in several Maine communities, transgender people and their supporters turned out to honor victims of anti-transgender violence. In Portland, the event drew about 100 people. Similar observances were held in Lewiston, Waterville, Bangor, Belfast, and Newcastle. Coming up, breaking down cultural barriers to exercise and the shrinking cost of this year's Thanksgiving meal. Exercise is something that most of us don't get enough of. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, about 80% of Americans fail to meet the recommended guidelines for physical activity. As challenging as it can be to squeeze in time for exercise, for some in this country, the obstacle is more about culture. In Lewiston, the YWCA is helping refugees and immigrants overcome health hurdles by offering a women's-only swim class. As Patty White reports, it's part of a wider effort to improve the health of new Mainers and help them to prevent chronic disease.
If you want to find Rama Elmi on a Saturday afternoon, it's a pretty safe bet you'll find her clutching a kickboard and splashing her way through the swimming pool at the YWCA in Lewiston.
I cannot miss my class, I know. It's like my med. It's a part of my med. I can't miss it.
Swimming may be must-have medicine for Elmi now, but until recently, it wasn't an option. Elmi is originally from Djibouti. She practices Islam, and in keeping with her religion's dress code, wears a headscarf, which can make swimming in a public pool a challenge.
For religion purpose, I cannot. I cannot take it out my scarf in the presence of other men except those who are my family circle.
There are a lot of other women like Elmi in the Lewiston-Auburn area who face barriers to exercise options that most Americans wouldn't blink twice at. Natalie Bornstein of the YWCA says her organization recognized the problem a couple of years ago after a Somali Muslim woman told staff that she wished she could swim.
We obviously said, you're welcome to swim anytime, and she said, I can't because there's this huge viewing window. I'm not comfortable being in the pool with men, and this just is not a place that's going to work for me.
So the YWCA designated 2 hours every Saturday as a women's-only swim class. They hang curtains over the viewing windows for privacy, and any woman, new or native Mainer, is welcome to swim for a suggested $2 donation. During a recent class, about a half dozen women swim in the pool. Some wear burkinis, a swimsuit that covers the body and head. A couple of women wear traditional swimsuits, and others, including Elmi, wear a t-shirt and pants. The hope is that by providing a comfortable place for these women to exercise, they'll be able to prevent health problems such as diabetes and high blood pressure. Those are common conditions for all Americans, but can be more prevalent among minority groups, according to the CDC. Fauzia Musa of Healthy Androscoggin, an organization that supports the swim class through a CDC grant, says immigrants from countries such as Somalia undergo major lifestyle changes when they move to Maine.
We went from very active life and healthy and organic to not so healthy life and no exercise at all.
In Somalia, Musa says, cars are a luxury and the primary mode of transportation is walking. Many Somalis also grow their own food. When they come to Maine, she says, they rely more on cars and often eat more processed foods.
Over time, you will see a woman who arrived a few months ago and very different weight in 6 months later.
Rama Elmi says she started swimming to get more fit and to help her left knee, which used to hurt so much she couldn't bend or sit down.
But now, since I practice the gym and the water, oh my goodness, I take back my life.
When Elmi started this class about a year and a half ago, she didn't know how to swim. But on this day, for the first time, she swims the width of the pool on her own without a kickboard.
Yes!
Elmi victoriously punches her fists in the air as her teacher, Susan Peck, cheers. Peck says in the class, both participants and teachers learn from each other.
I teach them swimming, but they teach me stuff about the culture that I never knew.
And the swim class has led the YWCA to expand its multicultural exercise options. They now offer a walking group after swimmers asked for a class in which they could socialize more. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Again, come on, you can do it. You can totally do this, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
This year's Thanksgiving meal will cost Americans less than it has for decades. It's part of an extended trend of food price deflation that's been going on nationwide. But if you live in Maine, you might not notice it so much. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
It might seem like food prices just keep going up and up, but according to experts, they're really not.
We've seen turkey prices come down. We've seen milk prices come down. And ultimately, that leads to some relief for the consumer at the retail level.
That's John Newton, Director of Market Intelligence for the American Farm Bureau Federation, which releases a Thanksgiving food price survey each year. When adjusted for inflation, Newton says the traditional turkey meal and trimmings will cost less than it has in decades.
The price of this year's Thanksgiving dinner is actually lower than it was 31 years ago when we first started this survey.
According to that survey, a traditional meal for 10 guests of turkey, stuffing, fresh cranberries, pumpkin pie with whipped cream, rolls, milk, sweet potatoes, and assorted vegetables will cost a grand total of $49.87. The biggest expenditure, a 16-pound turkey, will set you back about $1.42 per pound, about 2 cents a pound less than last year.
It's not necessarily a great thing for farmers when the price of food gets really cheap.
John Rebar, who heads Maine Cooperative Extension, says sometimes you get what you pay for. If your bird of choice is a heritage bourbon red or a Narragansett, you can expect to pay more like $7 per pound. Rebar agrees that it's possible to set a table for rock-bottom price, but he says with a burgeoning foodie and farmer's market culture, he'd be surprised if many Mainers didn't pay more.
Meals like Thanksgiving are really value statements, and that's bleeding over into more than just a one event, one day. It's now many people want to shop local year-round. People are willing to pay their local farmer a little bit more than they would maybe 20 or 30 years ago to get something that is local, is fresh, is of high quality.
Maine and Vermont, two places with a strong local food culture, both pay significantly more for their groceries than the national average. According to a study released earlier this year by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, Mainers' grocery bills per capita were about 30% higher than the national average. But other factors are also at play. Brian Todd with the Food Institute in New Jersey says even with its rebounding family farm culture, Maine is at the far end of a long supply line. Much of Maine's produce, such as potatoes and maple syrup, are shipped out for processing and then sold back to us.
The basic driver is logistics, that Maine is a little bit off the beaten path, so therefore it costs a little bit more for food to get up there, be it by train or truck in whatever manner. So in that sense, prices are always somewhat higher.
But nationally, prices are falling faster than they have in a long time, and not just for Thanksgiving food. Todd says newly compiled data show average food prices for October were 2.3% lower than they were at the same time last year, the biggest annual drop seen since the 1950s. Contributing to that is a stronger poultry industry, which has rebounded after avian flu wiped out some 50 million birds, including turkeys, last year. Egg prices are also down as much as 60% in some places. But the best news is for consumers who eat meat. Nationally, beef is 15% cheaper than it was last year, and pork prices are down 5%.
But if you're not buying those items, you may see increases in other areas such as cereals or other items in the supermarket that go into your cart.
For example, cranberries. Prices for cranberries have been at record lows in recent years, forcing growers such as Maine's Cherryfield Foods out of the business altogether, but now they're rebounding. Even if some Mainers can't or won't keep their Thanksgiving costs down to the $4.98 per person suggested by the Farm Bureau, experts say Thursday's big meal is still likely to be one of the most economical you've ever made. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And just in time for one of the busiest travel weeks of the year, gas prices in Maine have dropped quite a bit. Gas Buddy is reporting that the statewide average price is $2.20 a gallon, down 4 cents from last week. Gas Buddy analyst Greg Laskowski.
And this is good news for motorists, because even though a lot of people might expect that prices could go up before Thanksgiving, it looks like they're more than likely going to decline, even if it's just an incremental amount.
Laskowski says the next gas price milestone is November 30th. That's when the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, is meeting. Some observers say it's highly likely that OPEC members will vote to lower production to put an end to flagging prices. And one of Maine's most prolific and well-regarded environmental journalists has died. For 3 decades, until 2002, Phyllis Austin wrote hundreds of stories about the forest products industry, Baxter State Park, environmental regulations, and land conservation for the Maine Times. As Susan Sharon reports, Austin was also someone whose investigative reporting helped influence environmental policies.
Austin began her career covering the State House for the Associated Press and was named the AP's first environmental writer in 1972. She went on to work for the former Maine Times, one of the state's leading publications for environmental news.
I think she probably wrote more stories about more conservation issues in Maine than anybody in history.
Jim St. Pierre of the group Restore the North Woods was a friend of Austin's who also worked with her on some of those issues. He says Austin had a knack for knowing what to cover before anyone else was paying attention. St. Pierre describes her as one of the most quietly dogged environmental journalists he ever met. For example, she organized volunteers to research land use issues and recreation practices and to visit remote trout ponds.
You know, she was influential in a lot of ways. Her writing influenced some of the laws and regulations that were passed in the state that improved our environmental protections. And then in the nonprofit sector, she also helped to get Friends of Baxter State Park off the ground.
Austin also wrote two biographies, including one published last year about philanthropist Roxanne Quimby. But St. Pierre says Austin's biggest passion was hiking. She explored places as diverse as the Scottish Highlands and the Himalayan Mountains in Nepal. Her last story, published in the current edition of AMC Outdoors magazine, is titled On Reaching the End of the Trail. In it, Austin describes a freak injury in a ski accident in the 1980s that resulted in more than a dozen surgeries and eventually caught up with her more than 30 years later. She describes her lasting connection to wild landscapes and shares her mantra for exploring them. Do it while you can. Phyllis Austin was 75 years old. A memorial service is tentatively planned for January. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And many Maine residents awoke this morning to a landscape dusted in white. The storm system responsible for the snow dumped up to 18 inches in parts of upstate New York. Some areas in Massachusetts and Connecticut got about a foot. In New Hampshire, the snow caused car crashes, including a fatal one. New England ski areas, meanwhile, are rejoicing ahead of the traditional start to the season. And here to tell us what weather to expect in the coming days is meteorologist Paul Cousins.
The intense early winter storm is now nailed to Quebec, and it will be swirling snow showers across the county and the mountains overnight with another dusting to 2 inches, most of the ski resorts. For the rest of Maine, an overcast will remain, yet clouds will break south late. Temperatures remarkably uniform, 25 to 30 for all. Tomorrow, still more snow showers over northern Maine as well as the mountains. Limited sunshine, western hills, central and down east. From Lewis and Auburn, Fryeburg south, an even blend of sun and clouds. It will be very windy for all but the mountains and far north tomorrow. 37 to 47 north to south. Wednesday, a most agreeable day to become mobile throughout the entire eastern seaboard. There will be considerable cloudiness along the international border. Partly sunny down east, plenty of sun for the remainder of the state with less wind. Mid-30s to mid-40s north to south. Thanksgiving Day, quiet. Sunny north, central and down east, morning sun with increasing afternoon clouds. Over western and southern Maine, wet snow and light rain will develop during the afternoon, but really of nuisance value. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Monday, November 21st, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Fred Bever, Patty White, Jennifer Mitchell, Mal Leary, Erwin Gratz, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainepublic.org. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public, thanks for listening.